Hip-hop
Chronicles.
So you are what you are in this world. Either you're somebody or you're nobody. Be right back.
And I don't need no hook for this. This is not for commercial usage. Please don't categorize this as music. Please don't compare me to other rappers. Compare me to trappers. I'm more Frank Lucas than Ludacris.
You gonna shoot me in front of everybody? Huh?
That's right.
Come on. Oh,
you don't need no hook.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Beats, knowledge, and flavors, the Hip Hop Chronicles, that mix show designed to keep hip hop alive and keep you informed. I'm Mike Nice, back with another dope edition of the show, and we're going to take you back a little bit tonight. We're going to return to the no hooks era of the Hip Hop Chronicles, where I have my man, Dr. Jared Ball, on the show. And by the way, he's on the phone. Dr. Ball, welcome back, man.
Man, it's an honor, my man. Thank you very much, and shout out to the Chronicles crew.
Thank you,
it's
sir.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for agreeing to coming back on. I know you're a busy guy right now, and you're doing major things, but I thought, in addition to, you know, speaking with you about your book, the climate in America today is crazy, and I know you have words of wisdom and some light to shine on a couple of subjects. But let's start with your brand new book that's out right now, right?
It's out right now.
It's called The Myth and Propaganda of Black Buying Power. And I encourage everybody to pick it up. I've heard a lot. I haven't gotten the book yet, Dr. Ball, but I heard you doing a few interviews on Sirius XM and on another station that made me say I got to get it. I at least got to talk to Jared Ball. So can you give people a brief outline, a summary of what the book is about?
So first let me say, again, thank you, and that everybody, because of the uprisings around Black Lives Matter, the publisher has agreed to make the digital version of the book available for free.
Oh, nice.
So folks, and to make it all simple, folks can just go to my website, imixwhatilike.org, imixwhatilike.org, and right there they can click the link to get the free download and enjoy the book. Follow up certainly after that if they want to get a hard copy or something down the line. But please, by all means, get the book and have a look. Essentially, anybody has heard over the years a version of what I'm arguing, and I think I've proven is a myth that black people have more than $1 trillion in buying power, and if we were, quote, more financially literate, we could turn that buying power into something that will close the income and wealth gaps and the economic inequality that the entire community suffers. Essentially what I'm arguing and showing is that buying power as a concept is a marketing and advertising phrase born of a relationship between the elite politicians and the business community in the 19th century, and then turned into what I'm arguing is a weaponized myth in the middle of the 20th century by the black commercial media class into a misunderstood concept that has many of us thinking that money that is assessed by the commercial world that is available for purchase of goods and services that are owned by others is somehow economic power, when in reality, buying power is not a measurement of income, it's not a measurement of wealth, it is only a really fictitious measurement, a concoction of the advertising community of what mythological money is available for spending on certain products. And the reason that this is done primarily is because the commercial media environment, with the black press unfortunately involved in this, looking to capture the more than roughly $500 billion every year spent on advertising revenue, wants to project a condition in Black America that simply doesn't exist, but one that makes advertisers feel better, thinking that if they spend money on Black media or Black targeted media, that that audience could turn around and then afford to actually buy the products being advertised. But unfortunately, that concept has been misunderstood and misreported and projected to many of us as actual economic strength, and that is why I'm indeed calling it a myth.
Wow, that was deep. So you're saying when we do these blackout days and when we don't spend our money with the with non Black establishments, we're not really doing anything? Is that what's going on?
So one thing I'm trying to say is that I support, and I'm not arguing against any of it. So I support banking Black and buying Black and all of that. But the reality is we're not having the impact that many of us think or claim that we're having. One, Black people don't have money. In 2019, and the numbers are detailed in the book, Black people made somewhere around $800 billion collectively, earned collectively about $800 billion. So how could spending more than $1 trillion somehow mean economic power in the way that I think we're conditioned to believe or understand that concept or that term to mean? It can't be powerful to spend more than you earn. The problem is, and this is why propaganda is in the title of the book, the problem is it's not an economic argument. My book is largely a media studies or journalism argument about the role of propaganda and the failures of journalism in our media environment. Because the reality is, while all of these studies and reports come out every year that show the actual and really horrific economic condition Black people were in, even before this crisis, and it's going to be worse, you know, after this, the reporting that is given in most of the prominent commercial spaces and the most elite and most popular Black presses in particular is very different and is in fact created by those Black presses in connection with the Nielsen Group and the Selig Center for Economic Growth in Georgia, where all these reports come from. They all work together to project an unreality so that they can all argue for where advertising dollars should go. So it will make owners of Black businesses and Black media a little bit more money, but it does not help us understand our actual economic condition, which is, you know, bad and worsening by the day. So that's really what I'm trying to say. So, you know, by the way, just very quickly, one of the big comparisons often made about boycotting that is also misunderstood is a comparison to the Montgomery bus boycott, where we hear this all the time that we could do what they did, but we often forget that they were targeting one municipality for more than one calendar year, with one specific, you know, at least one initial specific political goal of desegregating buses. Mm-hmm. To extrapolate from that we can boycott even for just a day international conglomerates and multi-billion-dollar companies and private equity groups and have them capitulate to some undefined political platform is mythology also.
I can see that.
These, you know, by stopping for a day, stopping for a short period of time isn't really going to have the effect that many think it will or hope it will.
That's deep. Now, I'm just going to ask you this question. I don't know the difference, but someone mentioned a few days ago there's a difference between Black buying power and Black spending power. Is that true?
Not as I've defined it or I'm working with.
Okay.
And now, technically, and I do mention this in the book, there, within economic analysis or in economic study, there are some who differentiate between what purchasing and spending power mean. But what I'm talking about is that these terms and phrases are conflated all the time in the popular imagination and the popular reporting. So when we discuss it, there really is no difference between spending and purchasing power, and they're both misunderstood. They're both born of the same buying power, cost of living studies reports developed in the 19th century, specifically. But they all equally misrepresent or misunderstand what money does actually exist in the Black community or what could actually be done with it.
So, all right, so pivoting a little bit toward the racial divide in America today, and you mentioned the bus boycott in Alabama back in the day. what could we do with our money, with our resources, with what we have in the black community now to make a difference in what's going on in America today? Is there anything that you think that we can do?
I don't think that there's much we can do with what money we have because, again, we don't have much. The median net worth of a black household today is somewhere around $7,000 or $8,000 at the most. At the same time, the median black household also has a $6,000 credit card debt. Mm. So black people don't have any money that could be turned into real power in the sense that again, I think a lot of us hope or think it could. What my argument is, at least in terms of, my basic argument is that we need to be advocating for public policy that redistributes the very real gross domestic product of the country, which before the crisis was over $20 trillion. That is the value of all the goods and services and products that are spent and paid for in a given year in this country total more than $20 trillion, meaning that amount of money more or less redounds or goes to the top 400 or so families that own the economy in this country. And what I'm arguing is, and that's all public policy, that's all legislation that determines, how wealth is created, who gets to keep it, who's taxed, who isn't. I just saw the other day that 70% of all unpaid taxes are come from the top 1% of the people in this country.
Wow.
So even if they were forced to pay their fair taxes, there would be so much more revenue to be spread around. But even beyond the tax base, the amount of money that is generated through our paying bills and going shopping. So in other words, what I'm saying is instead of beating people up for spending and telling us that we're poor because we don't save our money and we don't go shop and we go shopping all the time and we buy things we shouldn't buy, we should, especially in a moment like this, see that that's not how it works. We should be encouraged to keep spending because that's what drives the economy. And what we should be arguing is that what the wealth that's created through our spending and paying bills and going to movies and getting our cars cleaned and all whatever we do with our money, buying $10 lattes and all that kind of stuff, instead of being condemned for that, the wealth that creates should, through public policy, be redistributed so that there are no poor people and that there is nobody without health care, et cetera, and so forth, and that we're not all fighting with each other over crumbs. Instead of focusing on the mythological $1 trillion of buying power that we do not have, there is a very real $20 trillion that is developed every year by everybody, but that only a handful actually get to walk away with. And we see the result of it. And so just very quickly, if we do what everybody keeps telling us all the time to do, like save our money and don't buy frivolous things, if I don't go and buy the $10 latte, that's cool. I could save $10. But the people who work at that coffee place lose their job. And then and they live in our communities, too. So what do they do? So in other words, it shouldn't be that I shouldn't, at least right now, at least as a stage for my fantasy for what a revolution might look like one day, but as a simple step, instead of telling me don't buy a $10 coffee, the question should be why should one coffee place get to walk away with billions instead of me and the worker and the people picking the beans all having much more so that we work less and have more and can relax and be more humane with one another. That's really what I'm ultimately arguing. But to get to that point, I think we have to get through some of the mythologies about how the economy actually works and what our relationship to that economy actually is.
Wow. So many questions, so many things I want to ask about that. If you're just tuning in, I'm on the phone with author, professor, and social activist Dr. Jared Ball, and he's discussing his new book, The Myth and Propaganda of Black Buying Power. And where can people get a copy of the book again?
Again, the simplest place is just to go to my website at imixwhatilike.org. They can click the link right there, get the free e-copy. And then if they want to buy a hard copy, they can go to wherever they would go to buy a book to get that.
Okay. And Dr. Ball, while I got you on the phone, I don't want to give too much away about the book, but I do want to talk about what's going on in the world today, not just COVID, but with things like the protest that's going on, not just with, Black Lives Matter, but now with a conversation we used to have a long time ago was about the Redskins and their team name and the team logo. And after George Floyd, it seemed like everything has come full circle and people are ready to have that discussion. The Redskins are even looking to change their name. As of now, I think they removed some of the actual photo of the Indian, and they're saying that they're going to announce a new team name soon. Do you think? I know you definitely think it's time, but, you know, just give me your thoughts on this whole situation. First of all,
shout out to you and to us, because we were way ahead of this on the Hip Hop Chronicles back in, I think it was 2015, when we were doing stories with interviewing Tara Houska, the indigenous activist who was calling for, you know, change that name, and we are not your mascots and all that stuff. So we as a crew, wherever we have, you know, even where we didn't always all agree on everything, we as a crew in terms of covering this, we were way ahead of the curve. And I have been, along with a lot of other people, in support of changing the name for decades. I'm born in D.C. and grew up a fan of that team, and I haven't supported them in years. And depending on what they do now, I may not change because there's a promise to they're going to change the name to, you know, something pro-military and something, I mean, some other kind of funkiness that
really
racist. Yeah, that was some of the reporting I heard just very recently, including this morning. And they also were floating, saying that they were going to call the team the Red Tails as a shout out to the Tuskegee Airmen.
I heard that. I was like, what?
But I don't like that either, really, because I don't want our struggle to become a sort of cleansing mascot, you know, a new mascot for this team. And personally, I would like to move away from this military theme, although I know the NFL and the military have a very tight financial relationship, which is what was really what was behind the NFL stance against Kaepernick, because they felt threatened that they were taking all this money from the military. Because people forget, by the way, the only reason that people that the anthem is played before the NFL, I mean, that's relatively new within the last few years of the NFL, and that's born of a Pentagon paid public relations contract for the NFL. So the idea that the NFL has always just been caring about representing the troops and you know, the flag and all of that is nonsense. I mean, it's a financial relationship that Kaepernick was upsetting, which is why now that it's somewhat cool to accept that level of critique. Even Goodell will come back and apologize to everybody but Kaepernick. And then
you think he'll come back and apologize to everybody but Cap?
Well, he already did. I mean, Goodell already came out a couple weeks ago and apologized for the NFL stance on the knee, and he talked about everything but mentioning Kaepernick. And, you know, and I don't know if this has something to do with whatever their legal arrangement is or whatever they think might be. If they apologize, maybe they'll be open to another lawsuit.
I see what you're saying. If they admit guilt, then he's got a case.
I know if I was someone's attorney, the first thing I would tell them is you better not go and apologize for whatever it is I'm defending you for. You know, that's not a good strategy.
Not at all.
But sort of to the point I was making a moment ago, what I would like for us to keep our eye on is something beyond symbol. Even some of the indigenous folks have come out already and said, you know, they're not moved by this late symbolic change on the part of the Washington football team when for so long, you know, Snyder has been resistant to changing the name and there's nothing coming behind it. So my thing is I would rather see, or in addition to name changes and monuments and statues coming down, I would like to see some legislation that got people some resources. So for instance, I would like to see football teams be made to redistribute the wealth they generate back to the communities that they're housed in. You know, I would love to see the Ravens, the revenue the Ravens generating, instead of going to all the elite executives of the football team, be redistributed throughout the city, throughout the state of Maryland, even, to take care of all of these the poverty and inequality there that could be funded by people going to watch football, which I think would be great and would make me, as someone who never goes to football games, become a fan. I would go every week if I knew that my, you know, my $150.
I was about to say $300.
My $300 ticket and my $50 beer and pretzels was paying for somebody's health care. Mm-hmm. I would happily go up in there, and you'd probably find me, you know, tipsy and full every week. But as it is now, I don't see why, you know, my fandom should be turned into creating wealth for a handful of so-called owners while so many people suffer, man, and the communities that produce the players that are breaking themselves every week on the field are literally financially worse off today than 40, 50 years ago. So
you think so? The people that are playing on the field are not in good shape? You think they?
No, I'm saying the communities they come
from. Oh, okay, yes.
The black community in particular economically is worse off today than 50 years ago. So this is what I'm saying. So a few more players are making more money maybe, but they're breaking themselves and literally killing themselves to do it, and they're not, and it's not something that helps the rest of us. And that's all I'm really saying. And I'm not saying the players owe us money. I'm saying the league that we all contribute to. You know, even when I'm claiming I'm boycotting and I'm sneaking a quick peek on the live stream or a TV channel, I'm somehow contributing to the revenue that's being generated for these people. You know, so even if I don't pay for a ticket or pay for an NFL pass or whatever to watch whatever, I'm still contributing just by my viewership, even if it's just for a short period of time or relatively not at all. So all this money is being generated, and we're not seeing any of it. And that's and collectively that is. And that's why that's what I would like to see addressed at some point beyond, symbols and names on NBA, slogan. And that, by the way, I agree with Kawhi Leonard on that one when he said, I want to see something more than a Black Lives Matter on the back of my jersey. I want to see something that, brings resources to my community. I absolutely agree.
Deep, and I think I agree with that one as well. Let me ask you, before we switch away from this subject, me and you, we went back and forth a lot about the Kaepernick taking the knee deal, and as it comes forward, hey, America's going to follow suit, and the NFL is going to allow them to take knees now during the playing of the national anthem. But in addition, something I think is a slap in the face, and I don't accept it as well as most people do, but they want to play the Negro spiritual before the opening games this season. What do you think about that? Before every game that they play, they're going to play the Negro spiritual. What are your thoughts on that? Is it a slap in the face? To me, I think so. We may disagree again on this.
I'm not a fan of it. In part, number one, I have to say, because I'm not the biggest fan of our national anthem. I think we've had better songs that could be picked, including Marcus Garvey has a great anthem for the so-called Negro people that I think is much more progressive and strong in its message. So that would be one starting point of critique for me. But largely, this is my point. I don't mean any disrespect to James Weldon Johnson. I don't mean any disrespect to people who are moved by that song. I don't mean any disrespect to any of that. But what I am looking for is something that's going to be material in how we respond to black crisis. And what we have to understand, all of this is in response to mostly black people getting out in the street and becoming a threat. This is a response to George Floyd being killed for 8 minutes and 46 seconds on tape while everybody was stuck at home during a COVID crisis and almost forced to watch it. So all of this combines to this moment, and if all we walk away with is a couple of statues coming down and flags coming down or a song being sung before a game.
Lift every voice before the football game? What is that? Like, really? And they're going to be drunk because they're going to be tailgating.
Actually, you raise a good point. I mean, by the way, that's a really good point. And if that is a really good point. And if I were a fan of the American National Anthem the way some others are, I might feel the same way. Why would we advocate some of these songs being played after everybody's been out there? I mean, I used to go to games now.
Tailgating is
I know exactly what is going on in those stands.
Yes.
And in the parking lots before the games and in people's houses before they get in the car to go to the parking lot.
Yes. Yes. At somebody's house while they watching the game. It happens. So why we want to bring – anyway, disrespectful to my opinion. But speaking of disrespect – and, people being stuck in a house and forced to watch things. Donald Trump, I'm not going to take much more of your time, but Donald Trump, I think that, in my personal opinion, I want to know yours. I think that he has forced the hand, or he's pushing, or he's instigating the racial divide. Your thoughts on that? Do you see that in any way? I know you do. Please explain to me. Talk to me about it.
Well, the only thing I would want to caution in that approach is that I don't want to separate Trump from the long tradition of this happening in this country. And while I know it's popular for people to say what he's doing is somehow new and more egregious, I personally don't feel that that is the case. I think that this country has had no problem under any president producing all kinds of, and he has to produce those messages. That is his only pathway to electoral victory.
But so openly, so, I mean, I think that the rednecks are running wild right now. That's the exactly way I want to put it. I think it was Tennessee or somewhere, somewhere, the three guys, they pinned the young black boy up against the tree.
Yeah.
The white couple pulled their guns out on some black people, some black protesters, for saying Black Lives Matter. No, all lives matter. I mean, that's over the top. It's over the top. And I think that is being fueled by some of the things that this guy does, some of the things that this guy says.
No, you're right. I mean, there's no arguing against that. I'm only trying to not – I just don't want to give all the other presidents or all the other administrations
a pass.
I mean, because – and in fact, really – and I also don't want to give, Biden, who admittedly I'm not supporting, I don't want to give him a pass either in his support for the crime bill and his support for Scalia and Thomas when he was in the Senate and his support for he wants to pay $300 million more to the police. He does not want to defund. He wants to extend the war in Afghanistan. I mean, he's, you know, this, and I'm not saying this to say that I think Trump is better, and I'm not saying this to say that I'm a supporter of Trump. I'm saying this to say that I don't want everybody else to get a pass so that, and in fact, I've even seen people making it seem like George Bush, part two, was somehow some utopia, and people forget how, ridiculously maddening that time period was as well. So, yes, you're right. I mean, he is doing all of that, and that is his only game and his only play. But what he's pushing a button on is an anti-blackness and a hostility that has been stoked and fomented and developed in this country for a long time and is not going to go away with a Biden victory and is not going to go away with just blaming everything on Trump. So whatever we do going forward, support Biden or not, we have to get busy on a number of different levels if we really want to make the kind of change occur that we want and we all deserve.
Mm-hmm. Well put. Last question. Do you think the protest and the tearing down of the statues is a move in the right direction?
I'm sorry, what was the second part? The protest and the what?
And the tearing down of the statues, bringing the statues down. And
already... I always think these are all good signs to me. And like my man says, it shows we have a pulse. And I'm appreciative of the fact, even on a selfish level, the uprisings in the street encouraged the publisher of my book to make it free when it was not a cheap book to buy before that. So in other words, uprising produces progress. It produces a response. It produces some sort of advance to the situation. What I don't want, and what I am cautious of, is how the response, the public relations response by those in power, has included a lot of what we've been talking about, symbolic acceptance that comes with nothing behind it. And that's the part I don't want us to get lost in. So I don't mind statues coming down. I'm in support of any number of those kinds of things happening. By the way, if we're going to pull down Confederate stuff, it's the damage done in the ruling and the enslavement approved and supported under the American flag was much longer and more brutal than what was done for the 4 years the Confederacy was in power. So, I mean, that would mean, Jefferson and Washington, those monuments, for starters, all got to come down. Mm. Lincoln married into the biggest slave trading family in Kentucky, the Todd family. Hamilton, getting all this praise, did the same thing, married in one of the biggest slave trading families in his time as well. So all of these people's praise needs to come down from my point of view. But to me, again, if it doesn't come behind with a policy that's going to get us housing and health care and jobs and, all of the things that substantively we are lacking as a collective community and a collective people around, not just black people, but everybody are lacking in need. If we don't come out with something like that, then it's not going to mean much to me.
I understand you. I'm in the fight with you. I want to see the change, definitely. People, if you're just tuning in, I'm on the phone right now with Dr. Jared Ball, professor here at Morgan State University, author of the new book, The Myth and Propaganda of Black Buying Power, a social activist, and one-time presidential candidate, right?
Yeah. Well, I was a nominee for the Green Party, and then I backed down to support the only black and brown all-female candidacy we've ever seen with the Cynthia McKinney Rosa Clemente campaign. By the way, the Green Party has a pretty interesting campaign. This is going right now. Sister Angela Walker and Howie Hawkins got an interesting platform going right now. People might want to just at least investigate in terms of what kinds of political platform could possibly be put onto the table if we had actual political power.
Okay, and it doesn't include Kanye West, right?
There's no Kanye, but there's a whole bunch of there's a whole bunch of redistribution and a whole bunch of ending of military and policing and, you know, a lot of free health care and housing and jobs. And a lot of good stuff in their platform with a real plan to make it real. I mean, you know, so I get that it's a third party and small in its hope, but in terms of what would be delivered in a victory is much greater than what we would get, I think, anywhere else, at least what's being offered out there.
Wow,
at least
nice.
Just something to consider.
I want to hear more about it. If you afford us the time and opportunity to speak to you again real soon, I want to hear a lot about it.
Anytime, and I'll say this just to shamelessly promote again. Anytime, of course, I'll come back. But if people go to imixwhatilike.org to get their free copy of my new book, they can also get the interview we just did with Angela Walker, the sister running on the Green Party ticket. And they can hear her discuss her whole platform and why she thinks it's important that they be heard. And they can consider for themselves, you know, what they think.
I love it. That's Dr. Jared Ball, his new book, The Myth and Propaganda of Black Buying Power, out now. Get your free copy at imixwhatilike.com. And Dr. Ball, if they want to reach you, speak to you, or have you attend an engagement, how can they reach you?
Same place, and it's imixwhatilike.org.
imixwhatilike.org.
But all my contact is everything that I do and will do, and you know, anything about me and the people I work with, they can all find there. My contact, more about me, and more stuff that I've done, they probably would find of interest. But that's all there at imixwhatilike.org. We have a lot of good stuff up there that might be of interest to people. But for certain, if folks are looking to reach out, that's where they can find me. And at imixwhatilike on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff, too.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And if you will please do me the favor and end the way you normally end, because we all want peace. And the only way we can get it is...
Hey, like Fred Hampton used to say to you, we say peace if you're willing to fight for it. So peace, everybody, and thank you very much, man, anytime.